The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
To the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am talking once again, Sharon K. Gilbert here, and welcome to our humble bunker. I don't have to do sign language anymore. It's really hard to do a show that way.
It is an audio only program anyway. Yes, a video program might have worked, but we're not set up for that.
mighty fine.
Well, welcome as we record this. The first one we've done in several months now. This is August the 12th.
It's 2012. Been at least 2 months because that's been how long I have been in no talk.
Yeah, purgatory.
Prison. Yeah.
Not that we believe in purgatory. That was a free expression. But tell us the story of what happened when you visited the doctor this week for a checkup on the nodes on your vocal cords.
Well, you know, I think many of our listeners already know this, but if you are not aware of it, I, of course, have not been talking for the last 2 months because I've had vocal problems off and on for a while now, and finally it got to the point where when I would sing certain pitches, I literally would have two or three sounds coming out at the same time. I was like those, you know, Tibetan monks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
That's not right.
No, it wasn't. And I went to the doctor, and of course she took a look, and she said that I had nodes in my vocal cords, and I would have to go on a no-talk, as little talk as possible, for 2 months minimum. And she said, take the medicine and come back. So I went back after 2 months, which was last week.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me, essentially, you're sounding better. You sound a lot better. How do you feel? We had that conversation. She said, okay, I'll see you in 4 months. And I said, well, hold on. You know, can we take a look at him now? And she said, well, you know, I could put the scope down there again, which is where they snake a thing down your nose.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I could put it down there again. I really don't think that they're fully healed yet because it takes, you know, 4 to 6 months for this to, and sometimes not even then. So I talked her into it.
Hmm.
And when she looked, she was aghast. In fact, she gasped. She really did.
How about that?
She said, I cannot believe what I'm seeing. They are pink and healthy and perfect looking. So there you go. Praise God.
Amen to that.
Now, prayer answered.
That's right. She was reluctant to use the word miracle, but we are not. We have no such qualms. So,
no.
You told me that she said that it was very possibly a six-month process, and here we are 2 months later, and she said they're perfect, and they look.
She was really amazed that they were totally gone. In fact, I've read, during those 2 months, I read lots and lots about nodules on your mm-hmm. vocal cords, many of the horror stories were they didn't heal at all, and they had to be zapped off with a laser or abraded off with that little miniature Dremel tool.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't look forward to either one of those. So I was so glad when she said that they looked perfect. Now, it's going to be a while before I can sing again, and I'm still going to sound a little bit hoarse. My voice is starting to get tired today because now that I'm back to talking, I was talking a lot at church this morning.
Sure.
She said that it's sort of like getting back on the track after not, you know, running for a while. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, a guy like me trying to go out and play basketball, full court basketball again after not having done it for, well, probably a good 15 years or more.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's been a long time since I've really sung in the entire vocal range that my cords used to do because they couldn't do it anymore. So I essentially had quit for the most part, and I was sort of faking my way through very low, you know, range over at church in the choir singing alto and sometimes tenor. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, and at Christmas we did an a cappella quartet with three of the fellows that I sing with. Well, two of the fellows that I sing with in the barbershop chorus, and I sang the high tenor part. Well, you sang the melody.
I sang in the lead in essentially the male range.
Yeah.
So now I can sort of look forward to singing high again.
I was happy to carry the high notes for you while you were hobbled.
Aw, you're so wonderful. Well, anyway, now back to stuff, because now we can talk.
Yes.
We just finished watching the closing ceremonies for the London 2012 Olympics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, overall, I have to say that they were pretty pitiful. I'm not into that kind of music over and over again, and I felt like I was sort of watching a mosh pit.
Yeah, it doesn't help that neither of us has been sort of out of the contemporary music scene since, well, you know, over 20 years.
Yeah.
I got out of the radio business in about 93 the first time. And
it's been 30 years for me, over 30.
Yeah, I lost interest in what was happening musically very shortly thereafter. So, yeah, I recognized a few guys, but those are all the guys who, well, you know.
Who are my age. Lots of white hairs.
Yeah, it was kind of fun seeing the fellows who were left of The Who and Queen.
Singing, talking about my generation.
That
we
was
were laughing and saying, yeah. You mean the one in the nursing home.
We had to, look that up because Daltrey and Townsend are the only ones left from The Who. You know, Kenny Moon, of course, did himself in with alcohol.
Keith Moon.
Kenny Jones was his replacement. Mm-hmm. But Daltrey is 68. Entwistle passed away years ago. Pete Townsend is also like 67. And I just thinking, okay, in another 18 years, what things that I do today will I not want to do then? jumping around on stage in front of huge speakers and loud music.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I do that
knee
now.
Knee replacements, hip replacements.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you see stories like that. Journey had to replace the lead singer because Steve Perry was told if he went on tour, he'd have to get his hip replaced first.
Yeah.
And he said, forget it, I'm not doing it. So they got this kid out of the Philippines who sounds like a dead-on Steve Perry.
I know.
So,
yeah, he does. He really does.
But the one thing that we were watching for, and I'm sure if you're listening to us, you probably were watching for it too, was what sort of symbolism would come out of the closing ceremonies.
And
it was kind of hard to miss.
You know, when we watched the closing ceremony from China, it was pretty sort of picturesque. Once you realized what they were building was a human version of the Tower of Babel.
Right.
And then
it was like Wicker Man meets the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, it really was. And, and I suppose that's appropriate considering Creepy. It was China versus, well, anyway.
Going to England.
Going to England. And anyway, they set it on fire. And so we were talking about that, you know, 4 years ago. It was right in your face. There was the phoenix right above the burning.
The flames, yeah.
Yeah.
Or the flame, which was comprised of all those different torches that kind of rose up and came together.
It looks sort of like a big, well, to me, it sort of looked like a big pyramid. Of course, pyramid is fire mountain, but I think it's something like that. Fire something, because P-Y-R is, isn't it?
Is this the root word for fire? That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, then you said, no, it kind of sort of looks like they set the Glastonbury Tour on fire.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Glastonbury Tour was central to the opening ceremonies, and the Glastonbury Tour is also central to British Israelism.
Yeah. What is the name of that that hymn that they sing? That
Jerusalem.
I'm going to look up the lyrics here because it's worth mentioning since we didn't do a program around the time of the
William
opening.
Blake. He wrote the lyrics of that poem.
And did those feet in ancient time? A short poem by William Blake that was then turned into the anthem Jerusalem, which was written in 1916. The poem reads as this. An interesting columnist that I read pretty faithfully, Vox Day, who writes at WorldNet Daily and blogs pretty frequently, said, you know, it's kind of in your face. They're just basically telling you what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
The poem, and did those feet in ancient time? And did those feet in ancient time walk upon England's mountains green? And was the holy Lamb of God on England's pleasant pastures seen? No. And did the countenance divine shine forth upon our clouded hills? And was Jerusalem builded here among these dark satanic mills? Bring me my bow of burning gold. Bring me my arrows of desire. Bring me my spear. O clouds unfold. Bring me my chariot of fire. I will not cease from mental fight, nor shall my sword sleep in my hand, till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got to tell you, the people over in England
were just singing that. Apparently, they sing that for, they've been singing for almost 100 years, over 100 years.
Yeah. Well, about 100 years, 1916. So, they probably don't give the lyrics a whole lot of thought. Just think, oh, okay, this is sort of like a national mm-hmm. song, just as we have songs in the United States. I mean, how many of us actually stop and look at the lyrics to the Battle Hymn of the Republic?
Well, how many really look at the lyrics of rock music?
Yeah.
A lot of those songs are just sort of, well, misogynist.
Mm-hmm.
Hate women.
Yeah. But they get away with it. Well, you know,
and
rap music, which is flat out... homophobic and, you know, all sorts of other things. But,
and anti-police and
sure.
government. And but anyway, the closing ceremonies, I don't know. I was watching on Twitter and overall people were saying, yawn.
Yeah, exactly.
Rubbish.
Meh.
I woke up for this.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of elicited in the two of us a great big, what?
I thought it was really an interesting sort of timing for the closing ceremonies to have that Phoenix. And in the background, were, I don't know that you could really see any. I couldn't. So if you were there and you saw the Perseid meteor shower, supposedly tonight was going to be the highlight of a time when they were estimating as many as 100 per minute.
Well, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. I didn't see that.
Well, we probably won't see it here either because we've actually got clouds here over east central Illinois, and we got a little rain for the third time in a week, and that hasn't happened since March.
Clouds, that's a conspiracy theory. There is no such thing. Just those lovely chemtrails that come out of the plant.
That's right. This has been a very long, dry summer here in much of the United States. If you're listening to us overseas, here in Illinois, which is the heart of the Corn Belt in the United States, in a good year, farmers here will get
150, 160
yeah. bushels an acre. And many of the farmers around here are saying they'll be lucky if they can get 20.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the guys have already filed claims with their insurance agents and have started chopping the fields down to let them ferment as silage, basically to feed to the cattle and the pigs.
Sounds like a horror movie. Silage.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Silage green. See, I'm from Chicago. I had to ask, and this is one of many times. When
I grew up knowing about silage.
Yeah, I have to go to my friends here we're in a pretty rural area. I mean, we are in a college town, but the college student population makes up half the population of the town that we live in. and we are around quite a few people whose lives are either directly or indirectly affected by farming. All of us are indirectly affected by farming, of course, but I'm talking like 1 or 2 degrees removed. And, they kind of think it's funny that, here's this smart guy from Chicago who's like 50 years old, still doesn't know about silage. Silage? What's that? Are you stupid boy? Well, yeah, I was raised in a city. Sorry.
You?
My mother has been telling me for years my education was sadly incomplete.
Well, you've learned a lot since we've been here.
Certainly have.
Well, let's see. The Olympics are over, and we saw a taste of what it's going to be like in 4 years.
The Phoenix Rising as it's going to hit. Oh, gosh, the Brazilian opening shot ceremony. You know, 4 years ago, I remember when we watched the closing ceremony, and we thought the Chinese, for all the symbolism, it was artistically
it was beautiful.
Phenomenal. But then they had this thing with the double-decker bus coming in. Do you remember that? To sort
mm-hmm.
of, take the baton and hand it off and, okay, now we're going to take the spirit of the Olympics over to London. And the little British section of that closing ceremony we thought was kind of lame. This whole closing ceremony was lame, but the British, the Brazilian part, I'm sorry, was just really a head-scratcher. What?
Well...
But again, we're old. We just don't get this music these kids
listen to. Honestly, the way things are going in 2016, I hear that little hum again.
I know. It's the family.
In 2016, they won't have a clothes on and title on television, and nobody will say anything about it.
Well, yeah, the Brazilians are, that's what they're hoping for.
Yeah.
That's what we're
saying. First time it's ever been, first time the Summer Olympics, and maybe any Olympics, I've ever been in South America.
So, yeah. And we were just saying, we wonder what happens in 4 years. But whatever it is, we just hope the Brazilians keep their clothes on because apparently not something they're known for during their big festivals down there.
Well, let's get to politics. Yeah. What's going on in Egypt?
That is the question, isn't it? The new Muslim Brotherhood president has essentially removed the pro-Western.
There's been a mass sacking.
Yeah. The heads of the military have been sacked, given mm-hmm. their pink slips. The Egyptian defense minister, Field Marshal Mohammed Tantawi, the Egyptian chief of staff, Hafez Sami Anan, and three more generals were let go. So essentially five of that ruling military council, which mm-hmm. was fairly pro-Western, pro-American.
I think he actually got rid of more than that. The article that you, are you looking at the Debka story?
Yes.
I saw a list earlier today, and I'll have to see if I can find it again. But it had about 10 names on it. So mm-hmm. He's been at it for a few days, getting rid of people. And the question, my question at least, is there some reason why he is he going to implement more of a Muslim Brotherhood profile throughout?
Well, that's what Debka is concerned about. We've been reading Debka for years. This is the first time I can remember ever seeing a story, you know, even through the war with Hezbollah, through all of the struggles that they've had with Hamas and Fatah prior to, through all of the years that we've been reading Debka. I've never seen them publish a story in all caps.
No, that's true. They haven't.
Yeah.
Well,
this one is in all caps.
This is an important story. It's happening
right
over a weekend. Honestly, a lot of people are looking elsewhere.
The Olympics.
Yeah. They're not looking at this. And I think this is huge because at the same time, there are rumors that both Egypt and Israel have assets in the Sinai Peninsula. That is
right
against their treaty.
Right.
They are not. That's a no-fly zone, no asset zone.
Well, Debka flat out says that they have moved M60 tanks made in the United States. The Egyptian army has moved M60 tanks right up to the Israeli border in the Sinai.
Then Israel will move something that we sold them.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially,
yeah, there was a 19-
we're making money no matter what.
There was a 1979 peace treaty, and under the terms of that treaty, the Sinai, which is the desert south of Israel, was supposed to be demilitarized. No, neither nation was supposed to have any military
exactly
in the Sinai. And so this is a vast departure,
you know,
from 33 years of...
32, two important numbers. You know, back 33 years ago, Egypt was a major player. Major player.
Mm-hmm.
And when that peace treaty was signed, Egypt essentially went to sleep.
Yeah.
And they've been asleep all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Arab Spring was designed to wake them up.
Yeah. The question then is how much of what has happened over the last week or so with the Muslim Brotherhood, candidate winning the presidency in Egypt and then moving quickly to assert control over Egypt's military, did the government of the United States and other Western governments anticipate? I mean, we either have to believe that they were so stupid they didn't see this coming, or they saw this coming and wanted it to happen, which is why they pushed Mubarak over the cliff.
Well, I have to tell you that our president, Barack Obama, has made grand overtures to the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
He, at least publicly, appears to think they're great. They're just a political wing. They're nothing but, you know, they're businessmen now.
Yep.
Look, you know, the Corleones, they're really a good, honest business family now.
Oh, Michael, senators and presidents don't have men killed.
Who's naive, Kay?
Yeah. Well, that was kind of weird. We reversed roles there again.
I know. Oh, well.
Well, here's something to consider, and maybe this is irrelevant.
Honey, your evening gown is slipping. You know, only a guy who's really comfortable and content with his manhood would say something like that. You're funny.
Well, in fact, our quartet sang today. We had a job today, and I made reference to that when I was introducing the various guys in the quartet and, you know, who, of course, sings the high part in the quartet. Well, that would be me.
And the tallest one.
Yeah, they thought that was kind of humorous. So, anyway, this may be apropos of nothing, but we're still in the middle of Ramadan. Ramadan ends on the 18th of August, which is next Friday. So next Saturday, excuse me.
Hi, Sam.
So I don't.
We're not done yet.
Yeah, don't know whether that is apropos of anything, but it might be something to keep an eye on.
Well, I don't know, but while we're talking about things that have sort of slipped under the wire over the weekend, President Obama, speaking of our president, mm-hmm. signed an executive order that puts the United States more in an international, a world lineup with women's rights and violence against mm-hmm. women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is
he signed that on late on Friday.
Yeah. And this, I'm looking for this because I had this marked. I wanted to talk about this today, and I, where did I put the note? It basically codifies women's rights as part of American foreign policy.
Right, preventing and responding to violence against women and girls globally.
Yeah. It doesn't really...
It sets up a committee to look into the problem, right. And they've got 18 months to figure it out.
Right. By which time he may not even be the president, but the opening section of this executive order, which is EO?
Mm-hmm. EO.
Yeah, what is the number? That's not on here.
Well, I'll tell you here in a second. It is Section 2, which I think is really interesting. It talks about creating an interagency working group, and here are the agencies within the interagency group, the Department of the Treasury,
mm-hmm.
Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
This is about violence against women. Department of Justice, that makes sense. Department of Labor, that makes sense. Department of Health and Human Services, that makes sense. Homeland Security? Management and Budget, okay. National Security Staff, well, Office of the Vice President, gives him something to do. The Peace Corps, that kind of makes sense because they represent in many ways the face of the United States in third world countries.
Mm-hmm.
The Millennium Challenge Corporation.
What the heck is that?
Well, we'll have to find out, won't they? White House Council on Women and Girls, that makes sense. And other executive departments, agencies, and offices as designated by the co-chairs. In other words, anybody else we decide needs a job.
Yeah.
And we'll put that in the numbers of jobs we've created.
Yes, that's right. And did you see that it's co-chaired by the Secretary of State? And the administrator of the United States Agency for International Development.
Yeah,
USAID.
I know. This is really, really... there's something odd about this.
Yeah, USAID is a cutout for the CIA, basically.
Yeah, it's a government... you're right.
The Millennium Challenge...
One of the NGOs that...
Millennium Challenge Corporation is MCC.gov, so this is a government agency. About the MCC. What the heck is this thing? It's an innovative and independent U.S. foreign aid agency. Independent, right. That is helping lead the fight against global poverty. Created by the U.S. Congress in January 2004 with strong bipartisan support, MCC is changing the conversation on how best to deliver smart U.S. foreign assistance by focusing on good policies, country ownership, and results. Okay, well...
That sounds like the typical description of most NGOs.
Yep. U.S. NGO. Yeah. Well, we'll have to do more research on that because it's like, why do we need one more organization? Why isn't this just under the U.S. State Department, foreign aid? What are the implications of this? I mean, the one that comes to my mind is if we're making how a nation treats women a part of our foreign policy, are we going to use that as justification for war under the responsibility to protect doctrine?
I think you may have hit upon it because there are women in every country.
Mm-hmm.
There are girls in every country.
Roughly half, yeah.
Exactly. Well, some more than half. And, actually, they're dwindling numbers in some countries.
Some less than half in some countries,
exactly.
Right.
I do think that it could be an excuse to go in and say we are coming in under international rights for women to reconstruct your country's
mm-hmm.
policies.
Yeah.
Sharia law, well, you're going to get mad at us if we tell you that you can't, tell your women to wear those really hot clothes and that you will stone them if they...
And we mean hot in terms of discomfortable.
Yeah, not
uncomfortable, not hot.
As in...
Yeah. as in the kind they wear in Hollywood or Brazil.
Look, you can see your toes.
Hamana, 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 hamana. And they're in, just not to rabbit trail too far here, but there's a real cognitive disconnect among progressives who were championing the cause of freedom in Egypt. And then when the Muslim Brotherhood came in, of course, they want to make Sharia the law of the land. That has more or less happened.
They being Muslim Brotherhood.
Right. The same has essentially happened in Libya, where women are going back to wearing the hijab, which they had more or less quit wearing under Muammar Gaddafi.
In fact, I think one of the male athletes competed wearing that.
Male athletes.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Didn't you say? I was thinking of. Isn't there an attire that men wear, like on their heads and things?
Well, yeah, but you know, women.
No, you're talking about the veil, the ascent veil.
Right,
I'm sorry about that. Well,
that would
if the guy wears it, then well, he loses his head.
Yeah, he gets the wall pushed on top of him. It is a. Again, we have to believe that either the people in our government didn't see this coming, were just so clueless about the political landscape of the Middle East and the religious landscape of the Middle East that they didn't see this coming, or they wanted this to happen.
Let us just come in here and just remind you that we are not backing either side. We're not a donkey lover. We're not an elephant lover. You know, Barack Obama is essentially trashing the United States in many ways and bringing us into what he sees as the world view, you know, and making us homogenize with everybody else. I think if we end up getting Romney and Ryan.
A little R&R.
And that's been said. We need R&R from Obama. It's not going to change. They're just going to do it with different words.
And different backers,
yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you've got the Goldman Sachs guy in office now. You'd have the Bain Capital guy in office if Romney should win.
Yeah, it's like over in Britain, they've had the Barclay guy, and well, he's gone.
So there is that to keep an eye on, how women's rights is now being made an official part of government policy and perhaps American foreign policy, since the Secretary of State is co-chairing this, this committee.
Well, and he's been, you know, to his credit, to President Obama's credit, He seems to want to help women. I do think that in many ways that women are still not quite where they need to be.
Sure.
Because as a Christian, there's no Greek, there's no Jew, there's no male, there's no female. We're supposed to all be equal. And I'm not talking equality as given by the, you know, the Constitution crowd that, how am I trying to say this? The John Payne is, no. The Enlightenment. Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine, right.
Isn't he one, the one who was writing all these things about equality that in some ways reflected Freemasonry beliefs? I'm rabbit trailing badly, aren't I?
I'd have to go back and and read. But I think I catch your drift, which is that there is a movement out there that is that is pushing for women's equality, even where such equality is not physiologically possible.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certain...
Saying that you and I are equal is not going to say that I can do the things you do.
Right.
Or that you can do the things I do, but that we should be treated with the same respect.
Exactly. There are jobs that men are better suited to. There are jobs that women are better suited to.
There are jobs dachshunds are better suited to.
Yeah. I mean, he moles a lot better than I do.
Oh, yeah.
He gets those moles, you know, like that. But that's not what I don't think that's what President Obama is about. I think he is. I think that's the goal that he is pursuing and that the progressives are pursuing. They want to eliminate all. Many of the gender boundaries.
And I think in many ways that science wants to go there, too. You take a look at the media, at the way science is going. We're being told over and over again that not only we are the same as chimps, but really men and women are really not a whole lot different. There are just a few hormones that are different.
Right.
And if we just kind of switch these around, then we can do whatever we want to. If you're a guy, you can have a baby if you want to. You know, you just have to really be a woman first and then become a transsexual into a guy. Then you can have a baby.
Yeah, weird world.
I want the world the way the Lord made it.
Yeah, well, that day is coming, and not a moment too soon. The president also is kind of on the hot seat here with some progressives. In fact, there was a lawsuit filed against the National Defense Authorization Act, earlier this year. We talked about this a bit. Section 1021 of the National Defense Authorization Act for 2012 gave the president the power to hold any U.S. citizen anywhere for as long as he wants. I suppose that's preferable to being assassinated or blown up by a drone anywhere, but this was inserted into the National Defense Authorization Act, which is essentially the funding bill for the U.S. military. So a lot of guys in Congress who, you know, probably didn't read the whole bill, just like they didn't read most of the bills because they just too much paper for them to get through, or they can't be bothered, or they just listen to their leadership and vote the way they're told. They stuck this provision in there that essentially eliminates these Fifth and Sixth Amendments to the Constitution, the Fifth and Sixth Amendments out of the Bill of Rights. You can be arrested. Habeas corpus goes out the window. You don't have to be charged or tried. You can be held indefinitely under this. And there was an injunction that was issued against this portion of the NDAA, Section 1021. This past week, they were back in court to hear arguments over the injunction. And rather disturbing were a couple of things. First, that the government is arguing that it should have the power to deny American citizens their constitutional rights. But even more than that, the attorneys representing President Obama's administration refused to assure the court when questioned that Section 1021, the provision that allows reporters and others who've not committed crimes to be held without trial indefinitely, has not been applied by the U.S. government anywhere in the world after the judge issued the injunction back in May. In other words, they wouldn't say, we obeyed the injunction and stopped arresting people. According to the reporter writing, this is a reporter for The Guardian, who's also a party, one of the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, she said they were telling a U.S. federal judge that they could not or would not state whether Obama's government had complied with the legal injunction that she laid down before them.
How dare you question the king?
Yes.
Well, George Bush wasn't a whole lot different, and I doubt that the next Republican president will be any different.
No, absolutely not. The irony to this, though, is that most progressives, they would be screaming bloody murder.
Yes.
They would be screaming bloody murder, but because it's a progressive, he's our guy. It is going more or less unreported because most reporters, including the reporter who wrote this article, her name is Tangerine Bolin.
That's got to be made up.
That's what it says in The Guardian. Maybe it is. Maybe it's a nom de plume. But she is a party to the lawsuit, and she said that she herself voted for Obama. Well, not a surprise. About 85-90% of the people in media.
Did you just say she wrote for The Guardian?
Yeah. She's an American reporter who writes for The Guardian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, keep an eye on that, because this is something that is really not getting much exposure in the news at all. And didn't get much when it was passed by Congress.
Well, while we're on that subject, there was a story that just came out about envisioning the 2016 Civil War.
Yeah.
Within that article was a brief mention about this envisioning the Civil War was written by a military colonel.
Yeah.
Back in 1992, mm-hmm. Colonel Charles Dunlap Jr. wrote a similar paper envisioning the future, and it is called The Origins of the American Military Coup of 2012.
Mm-hmm. I started reading it. You got further in it than I did.
I strongly recommend people read this, because his conclusion is that the reason it happened is because the American public got so accustomed to seeing a military that this was in 1992, so mm-hmm. he was seeing a military that really didn't have a whole lot to do during the 90s, so they were put into jobs. And he even talked about the first Gulf War as if there was a second one coming on later. So he envisioned that we were going to go back. But he talked about the military being used in, post-tornadoes and floods and police actions. And we're seeing that happening now more and more. And that the American public got used to being told what to do mm-hmm. by the military. And the military became accustomed to bossing the American public around. And worse than that, in his vision of the future, the military became slack in some cases for a while because they didn't have anything to do. And colleges said, we don't want that ROTC bunch around here. You know, we're very peaceful here. We really would rather they not be here. So as the sort of slack portion, the college, you know, student portion of the military filtered out,
mm-hmm.
what you were left with after it was shaken up and screened were hardcore, hardline military men who had trained at West Point and other military academies. They had no compunction about killing an American if they had to. So his conclusion was, because of that, in 2012, when the president was killed, the defense secretary went to the vice president and said, do not take the oath of office. Strangely enough, that happened in that...
Chief of Staff.
Chief of... Commander-in-Chief.
Commander-in-Chief, yes. The television series starring Gina Davis.
Yes, yeah. Gina Davis's character, Vice President, was told, don't take the oath of office. And she did anyway. She was told, as I remember, I may be mistaken, but I was sure that it was the defense secretary who went to her and said, don't do it, because he wanted to step in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this 1992 scenario, he did step in, and he became the military plenipotentiary and declared martial law and the Constitution over.
Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting premises that the author, and in fact, I found out there's a PDF copy of this, which I will link to in the show notes at PIDradio.com. Colonel Dunlap said that the population had aged, and which is mm-hmm. what's happened over the last 20 years, as the baby boomers have aged and become more concerned about personal security. They were willing to trade freedom for security, even if it meant the army patrolling the streets.
And he also said, there's a quote in here that he talks of, I wish I could find it, I can't find it right now, but essentially he says that apathy will lead to military insurrection. And he talks about how because they got older that they were less inclined to vote. I would argue that older people tend to vote more, but read this. I think you'll find it really interesting. The name of the plenipotentiary, in other words, the military commander of the United States, is named Brutus.
Was the guy who stuck the knife into Caesar.
Yeah. And killed Popeye. Or tried to.
Yeah. The origins of the American military coup of 2012, Charles J. Dunlap Jr., the author. We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
It's really a pretty quick read. It's about 15 pages long. The PDF is longer, but there are about 10 pages of citations.
Yeah, so worth reading just because he seems to have seen some things or anticipated some things 20 years ago that appear to be playing out. So we're worth being aware of just to try to make sense of what's going on around us. And there are things that just aren't making a whole lot of sense, like another... lone nut decides to go off with a handgun and kill some people. They were talking about the shooting at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Seven people killed there. The knee jerk cry from progressives is that this just proves that we need to take guns away from people.
Also, there's the situation that was going on. I think it may be over by now. I hope it is. That protest in Anaheim where the police were sending in dogs and firing at crowds of mothers and kids.
Yeah. That took me by surprise. I mean, I'm not an expert on, I'm not very familiar with Los Angeles or California. I've only been out there once, but I've been through Anaheim several times, and this was about 20 years ago. I just don't remember Anaheim being that kind of a community where you'd expect a lot of people to turn out on the streets and protest. Now, again, I'm not that familiar with the area, so I could be way, way wrong.
No. The other thing was...
Things may have changed in 20 years, too.
Well, there's also a video that I think was posted yesterday. The gentleman with a knife who was running through a crowd in New York it was on Saturday afternoon, I think, mm-hmm. and there were lots and lots of people on the streets, on the sidewalks, and he appeared to be a crazed individual who was being chased by quite a number of officers on foot, guns drawn, and there were many police cars around him, and he was shot 11 times. And these were police firing at him with a large number of innocent citizens very close by. They could easily have hit, you know, an innocent bystander. So I don't really know what the story is there. I've not followed up on it today. I've been doing other things. But it seems to me that it's pretty sad if the police, if they see someone with a knife, just make the assumption that we've got to take him down.
Well, the story is, according to CNN, that police approached this man near Times Square. It happened at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, which is a time when you'd have a lot of tourists around. And officers approached the man because he was smoking what appeared to be a marijuana cigarette. The man, who was aged 51, became agitated, brandished a knife which had a 6-inch blade, and additional officers arrived, pepper sprayed the man 6 times to no effect. When he menaced police with the knife and refused to drop it, he advanced on uniformed officers, according to the deputy commissioner, refusing officers' repeated commands to drop the weapon.
They couldn't tase him?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
good heavens, they tase grandmas anymore.
But do they carry tasers around with them all the time? I don't know.
Well, that's a good question.
But it does seem that 11 shots struck him. How many shots missed and how many people were around?
Well, I don't know if 11 struck him. That's how many I counted in the video. There were two videos by public-minded citizens who used their cell phones to post the videos very quickly to the internet. In this day and age, that stuff goes up fast.
Yeah, yeah. So there you can find videos of this incident on YouTube or anywhere on the web if you want to find it.
But you know what
CNN's
it made me think of? And it made you think of it, too, that episode of Millennium.
Yeah, yeah, where the guy who's acting crazy is later found to be very sane and coherent.
And there's this long, wonderful soliloquy that he has in the script, and is so well delivered by the guy who used to play Link. Isn't it that actor?
Well, it's that actor, but the soliloquy is delivered by another guy who is like speaking in an abandoned warehouse, and a bunch of people show up to hear him talk, and he's talking about trucks, how they, trucks are just like dumb. They don't know what they're going. You say go left, they go left. They turn wheel right, they go right, and we're just a bunch of trucks. And
You
never know when you've been flipped. But, this is just another example of crazed individual in public going nuts.
Zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, I was thinking about whether I wanted to go here. Yeah, I think I will. Anyway, we were watching something on Hulu last night and saw an ad out there for Kony 2012, which I honestly was kind of surprised to see the ad, because I thought after the guy who produced the film was arrested for his crazed naked behavior in on the streets of San Diego, I thought that for sure that would just sort of go away and people would forget about it.
No, but it doesn't seem to be going away.
Yeah. Invisible Children, I'm sorry, is the group. But, I hadn't connected his crazed behavior in the nude with some of the other crazed naked men that have been reported over the last 3 months.
You know, I had neither until you mentioned it. Now, he wasn't in the Modesto area, was he?
No, I'm looking up the article now. Jason Russell, co-founder of Invisible Children and director of Kony 2012. Article was from March. So this was before we really started tracking the naked guys crazy in public trend, which really began around the end of May.
Not done yet, Sam.
But Russell wasn't violent. He was just naked and doing
acting strangely.
Yes. Yeah.
The sad thing is that there are chemicals out there that can be poured pretty easily into a drink, and like Iocane,
stake my life on it.
Invisible, you can't taste it, can't smell it. That will essentially be like flipping a switch on you. If you're told to do this, you'll told to go right, you go right. Told to go left, you go left. There's one more thing that I want to mention before. I don't know really how we're doing on time, but There's a story that happened in the Strait of Hormuz today, mm-hmm. and that was that a U.S. destroyer collided with a Japanese oil tanker.
Oops.
Yeah, oopsie. I think it's getting crowded in the Straits.
Yeah. I didn't see the story. I saw the headline, but I didn't read the story. Any injuries, damage?
Let me look. Japanese don't take kindly to that.
No.
Let's see. The U.S. Navy said its guided missile destroyer collided with a Japanese-owned oil tanker in the Strait of Hormuz early Sunday morning. No one was injured in the collision that occurred about 1 a.m. local time.
Yeah.
When the USS Porter collided with the Panamanian-flagged... Wait a minute. Oh, Japanese-owned.
Mm-hmm.
Bulk oil tanker, the MV Otowasan, the Navy said in a statement. They didn't provide any details about the collision, so the rest of it is just conjecture.
But you're right. It's got to be pretty dark out there, but be pretty crowded, pretty dark, of course, 1 in the morning.
Well,
but
I have to say
dark,
this,
the,
that they're
guided...
lucky they didn't get fired on, because the U.S. Navy tends to fire on, you know, vessels that are approaching them, even if they're the one in the wrong.
Yeah, I would have to think that a guided missile destroyer would have a lot of electronic equipment to help them spot other
You'd hope so.
Vessels in the vicinity. So, and oil tankers are really, really big. They don't move that fast,
they
and they're hard to turn.
They probably have some lights on them.
You'd think so. So,
yeah.
There's something going on there. There's a story out of Delaware that we need to touch on, because this is relates to stories that we've talked about before from Bridgend in Wales.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
11 young people in Delaware have committed suicide in the first quarter of this year, the first 4 months of this year, actually, January through April. And this is the thing that is frightening. Another 116 tried to kill themselves. 11 young people in Delaware committed suicide in the first 4 months of the year. Another 116 tried to kill themselves. Three at one high school, Polytech High School, killed themselves within 2 months of one another.
The CDC is investigating this.
Yeah. And the report issued by the CDC has not identified the hometowns of the students or the schools of the dead.
No, but they're all within, you may have just said this, within 20 miles. No.
It's all Kent and Sussex County.
Yeah, they're very close. And I think the deaths are kind of clustered around this one school, actually,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly. Now, the CDC listed a whole lot of, you know, data points about the various kids that they've investigated. And the biggest common denominator is that they all have, well, mental health issues.
Yeah, the 11 who killed themselves all either hanged themselves or inflicted a gunshot wound. The 116 that were non-fatal usually involved overdoses, often with over-the-counter drugs.
Yeah.
So the question is, what would cause, I think the first question is, what is normal? Well, according to the information released by the CDC, in Kent and Sussex County together, the three previous years, there were three suicides in this age group, age 12 to 21. There were five in 2010 and four in 2011.
Does it say how many attempts?
No, it doesn't. But it just said number of deaths by suicide in Kent and Sussex County, youth aged 12 to 21. So you've got three in 09, five in 10, four in 11, and then you've got 11 in the first 4 months. And 116
that
additional
failed.
Attempts. You're right.
And
so,
praise God they failed.
Yeah. So the question is, what is the link? And the CDC at this point is saying, we don't know.
It was something like 67% or more had what they're calling mental health issues. There are tests that can be given and very often are given to your middle school and high school children. And if they answer normally, you know, do you sometimes feel blue? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you don't belong? You know, do you sometimes feel like people don't understand you? At the end, they are deemed to be mental health problem.
And remember, when you're saying 64%, that was seven of the 11 who killed themselves.
Exactly.
So you're dealing with a really small sample size.
Extremely small.
Right. But again, you make an excellent point. What constitutes a mental health problem?
Mm-hmm.
Well, anymore, that can
be everybody.
Yeah, just
so let me just link that to another story that you may or may not have noticed. Doctors target gun violence as a social disease.
Hmm.
Gun violence is a disease.
Really?
So will they now say suicide is a social disease? In other words, if you're around somebody, will you catch it?
Well, you know, that sounds like hate speech. I think
it really does.
Yeah, who are we to tell them that they don't have the right to end their own lives?
I'm amazed. We're going to get there eventually.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to bring up a book, by the way, that it's a fiction, work of fiction, very creative, very clever, but it goes in that direction. And this was written in 1999, so this goes back a few years. The name of the author is Lars Walker. He's a Christian, and he wrote a book called Wolf Time.
Oh, I remember you're talking about that.
Yeah, I started reading it again. You can download it for free from the Bain Publishing website. That's B-A-E-N.
Wolf Bain?
Yes.
They've got B-A-E-N, not B-A-N-E.
They've got something called the Bain Free Library, where a number of their authors have made works available at no charge. And Wolf Time by Lars Walker gets involved in... it gets into a lot of these issues and what we're getting in, what we are probably already in, which mm-hmm. is a post-Christian America.
Yes.
But it's taken to the extreme where one of the protagonists who is a professor at a college in Minnesota called Christiania, okay, which was originally founded, of course, as a mm-hmm. Lutheran mm-hmm. college, is no longer allowed by the government to insist that its professors are actually Christian. So, you know, okay. and that's the least of it. I mean, it goes way beyond that, but it's worth looking up if you want something to read, and especially at the price, you can't beat it. Wolf Time by Lars Walker.
Sounds good. Well, I want to get back to what I was saying. Sorry. About the... No, that's okay. I think that's really, really cool. I just want to really briefly say that this article about doctors saying that gun violence is a social disease, this is really important that you sort of tuck this away in the back of your brain, because the story from AP starts out, is a gun like a virus?
Huh.
A car, tobacco, or alcohol?
Oh.
Yes, say public health experts who, in the wake of recent mass shootings, are calling for a fresh look at gun violence as a social disease.
Uh-huh. Which means if you own the gun, you might be a carrier.
Exactly.
In more ways than one.
Yeah. In fact, there may even be a genetic component. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't say that in the article, but if they're going to, you know, say it's a disease that you can catch, we'll need to, you know, sequester these people, quarantine them.
Yeah. And I don't doubt that we're going to get to that point. I remember when we worked out in Missouri, the young man who produced the talk show that I hosted was a gun owner and made no secret of it. And I know that there were people around the offices there who looked at him a little askance because he owns guns. He's maybe one of those militia types. Nicest guy you'd ever want to meet.
He's a nice guy. He really is.
And his squirrel stew was really good.
Oh, yeah.
So, but
the day's going to come when we're going to wish those guys were living with us, because... If there's no food on the table and there's game in the woods.
Yep, yep. The guys who know how to get it, dress it, will be in
especially
high
if you
demand.
Some good barbecue sauce.
Exactly. So, well,
that's our show.
Basically what we've been looking at as we get back to it.
It's nice to talk to you again.
It is. I mean, you were cheating a little bit in talking.
I know. There toward the end, I was cheating. I was getting tired of doing sign language because nobody could understand me. What? What are you saying?
It was like playing charades 24/7. Two words, three syllables.
I know. I could have carried around a tablet, but that's for wusses.
Yeah. So, yeah, the big thing, of course, I think, is what's going on in around Israel.
Mm-hmm.
One of the takeaways from... The Prophecy Summit at Branson, and something that Tom Paine has been talking about with his Template of Time and looking at the way things are happening there. The consensus among the guys who were looking at prophecy and looking at the politics of the Middle East was that something was going to break between Israel and its near neighbors. And, you know, a year and a half ago, I would not have envisioned the possibility of war between Israel and Egypt. And now it appears, if Debka's reporting is correct and that M60 tanks are on the border in the Sinai, it appears very possible. War between Syria and Israel. Well, apparently there are meetings taking place between Turkey, the U.S., and Israel now on worst case scenario, which is apparently the Syrian government decides to deploy chemical weapons. So things could get very ugly in a real hurry over there.
Well, I'm going to leave you with this thought. If you're thinking about going to your state fair this year, don't touch the pigs.
What is that new strain of?
It's H3N2V for variant. It has an H1N1 M gene in it, which means that it's a hybrid, and we don't know what it's going to end up doing. Hmm. So just, I'm serious. If you're going to go to a state fair or any kind of county fair, you know, be very careful. Keep your kids especially away from the pigs.
Here in our small town.
Yeah. We got a couple
local
of cases.
Paper, yeah, the local paper has said that there are two cases of kids who've picked up this H3N2 and presumably from the pigs. Mm-hmm. And the Illinois State Fair has announced new steps to try to halt the spread of the disease. No fatalities as far as we know, just something to keep an eye on. Well, until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
Bacon. Bye-bye, everybody.
The Baconator.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of